You clock out. We clock in. Welcome to the Torn by Sports Lunch Break.
Welcome to this edition of the Torn by Sports Lunch Break. Joining me today is Peter Woodburn of the Gonzaga SB Nation blog, The Slipper Still Fits. How are you doing today, Peter?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you, Grant?
I'm doing well. It's actually a sunny day in Utah, so I'm going to count my lucky stars for that. I don't know what is the weather like in Washington through winter?
Normally in Spokane, especially, I live in Seattle right now, but in Spokane, I know that the snow is on the ground, as it will stay in the winter for about the next, 3 months. Seattle is, of course, raining, as to be expected at this time of year, so...
Well, my understanding of Seattle is it's supposed to rain all year 24/7, right? Isn't that what's supposed to happen?
Yeah, mine, except for the summer. The summer is nice. I call it the nation's best kept secret. I probably shouldn't actually even say that because that kind of violates that best kept secret, but so it goes.
The whole world now, the world knows now, which is great.
Yep.
Let's talk some West Coast Conference hoops. I mean, BYU and Gonzaga are going to be meeting here shortly, and they've consistently been, Gonzaga has clearly been number one in the West Coast Conference for a long time now, and then BYU, since joining the conference, has definitely been up in the upper echelons of the conference. I mean, I guess my first question to you, instead of assuming, I'm going to ask the question, what are Gonzaga's goals coming into this season?
This season was tough because last season the team lost Kevin Pangos and Gary Bell Jr., who had pretty much been the backcourt seemingly forever, although it was 4 years. Then they also lost the senior transfer from USC, Byron Wesley. And that was a big chunk of the offense. And so coming in, when you lose your entire backcourt, things are going to be a little iffy. And so everyone kind of seemed that they were, prepared for what for Gonzaga is somewhat a down year, which means that they potentially lose more than four games. They drop a couple of conference games and everything. And then the problem was that right before the season started to come up, there was all the hullabaloo about having the best front court in the nation between Domantas Sabonis, Kyle Wiltshire, and Shema Karnowski. And it's really easy to buy into that national hype when it starts. So coming in, I think that people started out grounded and then they just kind of forgot where they were and they just dove headfirst into thinking that this was a team that wasn't going to essentially struggle as much as it has so far through this season.
Yeah, I mean, but as much as, I look at the statistics, I mean, clearly that front court, or I always mix up front court and back court, to be honest with you. Wiltshire and Sabonis are shredding it
and that is true. And they have been, they've been out of this world. Domantas Sabonis, especially, is just, it's insane, the numbers, especially that he's been putting up since Shema Karnowski went down with a season-ending back injury. And he's, in a weird way, you don't think that if you're losing your starting senior center, who's your, biggest, essentially, he was the biggest piece to the puzzle defensively, and Sabonis has practically just made everyone forget that Karnowski was even on the team in the first place. I mean, he's been amazing lately. And the problem has been that the backcourt, it's young. They were essentially kind of going in with Josh Perkins, who's a redshirt freshman, and he only started a few games, or he didn't even start last year. He only played in a few games last season before he broke his jaw in, I think, a Thanksgiving tournament. And then he was out for the season. So he's a redshirt freshman. And then Silas Melson really only got maybe, I don't know what it was, 8 minutes a game last season. It was just kind of dipping his toes in the water. And so he's a sophomore, but they're both young, and they're both untested, and they've both been pretty unreliable, and not very consistent. And that's kind of made it a little bit tough for this team because you, on one end you have Wiltshire and Sabonis who are practically somehow good for like close to, you know, 50 to 60 points a game combined. But then the question is, where's the rest of the offense coming from? And that's been what the team has really struggled with as the season's gone.
Well, I mean, as much as the season's gone, you know, I really have the confidence per game stats in front of me.
Uh-huh.
You know, it looks like the guys are still producing. Perkins is averaging over 14. McClellan's averaging over 11. I mean, is it a matter of not their inconsistency, but maybe, you know, one person stepping up to kind of help carry the load each game outside of Sabonis and Wiltshire?
Yeah, exactly. That's it. I think, as the season's progressed, the backcourt has started to kind of gel and perform a little bit better, which is also essentially to be expected. Cause you also have like Eric McClellan, who you mentioned, who's been definitely hitting his stride lately. He was a transfer last season and so he sat out, you know, the year and then he was also injured part of last season. So he hadn't really had a lot of time to also play with the squad. And Perkins, just being the point guard, just had to get something going. And he was just turnover prone, foul prone. He's still pretty foul prone, but he's clamped down on the turnovers. And he went through a period of time where it really seemed like he just wasn't willing to take the open shot. Like, it just, his confidence seemed a little bit rattled and he just kind of had to play through it. So both of those players have really kind of picked it up in the past couple of weeks, especially towards the end of the non-conference and leading into the conference play. And that's made it a lot easier to kind of have a little bit more consistency from someone in the backcourt. I know that the issue still is that they are, since conference play has started, it's through the Gonzaga had a couple that are really close, a road trip with Santa Clara and USF where they, went into overtime at San Francisco before they finally pulled away. And against Santa Clara, they just narrowly squeaked by with a 2-point win. And the offensive efficiency during conference play has been a little bit down. Because there isn't really a balance, there hasn't been too good of a balance between how the bigs are doing and how the backcourt is doing. So,
well, I mean, what you bring up two games I definitely wanted to talk about in that road trip kind of presented. I mean, did it present a way in which BYU can try to stop or slow down Gonzaga enough to win against them this week?
Yeah, I think that what was going on, and it totally makes sense if you're the opposing coach, is that, I mean, you had teams that were just flat out not respecting the Gonzaga guards, and they had no reason to, because the Gonzaga guards couldn't hit anything. I mean, open threes, you know, nothing was falling for them. And so Wiltshire and Sabonis are amazing. They're both amazing players, and they're both going to score a lot of points. But if you make it harder for them to score points and just kind of pack it in the paint, you know, Gonzaga at the time, they were a pretty one-sided or one-dimensional team for the most part. And it's a lot easier to deal with that when you don't even have to worry for the most part about the other three players on the floor even scoring points. And so teams were starting to run with that. And also one of the big issues, and this is going to play pretty well in the BYU's hand, I think, because if I remember correctly, the BYU shoots the three pretty well from a lot of different players. And Gonzaga's three-point defense has been really rock solid at the beginning of the year. I mean, their defense was essentially winning them games, and potentially winning them games that they didn't necessarily have any business winning in the first place, because they were just, I mean, they were rock solid guarding the outside shot, and they were at a time, I think, maybe fourth, they had the fourth or fifth three-point defense or best three-point defense in the nation, and that's kind of slacked a little bit. I think against Santa Clara, Jared Brownridge hit like six threes against them, And against San Francisco, I think San Francisco shot over 50% from beyond the arc. And when other teams start to do that, it makes it a lot easier to win because you're basically trading 3 points for 2 points when the game kind of speeds up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you bring out the speed of the game, and right now I'm looking at the points per game for each team. Gonzaga is averaging about 80, BYU is averaging about 85. How high do you think the point total is going to be in this game?
I mean, I think that, you know, BYU, from what I've seen of them this season, and also just from the way that all the games that I've seen with them in previous years, you know, BYU loves to run the ball and they love to pick up the pace of the game. And Gonzaga, for the most part, being a more kind of front court loaded offense, they tend to try and do a lot more kind of half court offensive sets, and they're not a slow paced team by any means. They can still run the floor with the best of them, but I think that this is going to be a very high scoring game because I just really don't necessarily, I mean, BYU just has so many different scoring options that you can't really, if you take one, you know, you take Kyle Collinsworth out of the picture and then you have three or four perfectly capable other shooters on the floor. And I think that this game is, I think they're going to run up and down the court a lot. And it is going to be a pretty high paced game. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we're looking at a game, you know, that is ending around like 80 to 75 or 85 to 80 or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm expecting from a basketball fan myself, high scoring, exciting, fun to watch game coming up later this week. But, I mean, if I had to nail you down for a prediction, what would be your prediction for this game?
The prediction for this game, I really think that, you know, I write for the Gonzaga blog. I'm a homer. I'm going to say Gonzaga's going to win it. But I think the main reason is, number one, this is the first game back. The students just came back from winter break. So students haven't been there for the past few weeks. So that's that is one of the biggest factors, when you go in to play in Spokane. I mean, BYU's got the same thing. They got such a great home environment that no matter what, if you're a visiting team, you just have to work that much harder because it is just ferociously loud in there. And in Spokane, the students are just right up on the sideline and they make a lot of noise. And so with that, I think that'll be a really big factor for the Zags. And I think that they're going to be able to pull this game out. But I think it's going to be close. I mean, I would say that I would give Gonzaga maybe, you know, 82 to 76 or something like that.
Wow. I mean, that's quite the game. That'll be,
yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, I mean, that's either a tie ball game coming up close and someone's forced the foul or something like that. I mean,
that's kind of what
I hope your heart's healthy. All right. Well, Peter, I really appreciate some of the insight. You know, one thing I really like to give people that, you know, don't know the opposing teams as well, you know, and this will probably be my closing question, would be if you could pick one player that would surprise BYU fans or someone they don't particularly know about, because, I mean, I assume everyone's heard of Wiltshire and Sabonis and maybe Perkins or something, but who would be the X factor player that BYU fans may not hear about before the game but should be aware about?
I think the major one is going to be Kyle Dranginis. He's a senior, he's really a guard, but he's occasionally when the team goes to a four guard set because of foul trouble or anything, you know, he's played the power forward position before. I think he's 6'5 or 6'6, so he's got a little bit of size to do it. And he's kind of, I would say, you know, he's the equivalent of like Kyle Collinsworth light. I mean, he does everything across the board. He does not score a lot of points. I think he's only averaging maybe 6 points a game this season, but he's a very, very efficient player. He does not turn the ball over. He oftentimes will lead the team in assists for the game. He can hit a three-point shot, although he isn't doing it as well this year as he has done in previous years. But he's just one of those all-around hustle glue guys that usually at the end of the game is the one that you start to see somehow, you know, they make the crucial steal or they make the crucial three or just any of those sorts of things. And he's one of the few, you know, he's a senior. He's the senior that's been with this team for 4 years and not everyone else has. So he's kind of the silent, I think he's a little bit of that silent leader for the team. And he's the player that will, I think that BYU fans will have to pay attention to because he's not going to dazzle when the end of the box, like with the box score and his stat line, but he will be in pretty much, he will be all over the court on both ends of the floor.
All right. I will be looking forward to Guinness. Really looking forward to this game. I appreciate your time, Peter, and hopefully it's as good of a game as you're predicting it to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for your time.
This has been a Torn Light Sports production.